Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm delighted and a little bit overwhelmed to have two brilliant authors sitting before me. I'm here with Graham Simpson and Anne Buist. Is it Buist? Am I getting it right?
Oh, yes.
Good. Thank you. Because I just heard it, and I thought, that's how they say it. Brilliant. And we're here to talk about your new book, Two Steps Forward, which I've been reading and really, really loving, and I've got to recommend it to everyone who has dreams of doing anything a little bit out of their comfort zone, but also who likes just a touch of the romance, with a spoonful or two of honesty, I must say, about marriage. My first question is, how do two people who are married sit down and write a novel together and still remain married?
Let me go first, okay? So that's the first challenge. Who goes first? We've been writing together for a long time. I mean, Anne published her first novel, Medea's Curse, in 2014, was it? I published The Rosie Project in 2013, and even before that, Anne was writing erotic romance under a pseudonym and so forth. But we've always plotted together, and we've always been each other's first readers. So it was a fairly natural transition to writing a book together.
Was this one of the things that drew you together? Was this love of writing?
Oh, I don't think so. I've always wanted to be a writer, so I was certainly at our first wedding anniversary. We said, what do we want to do in the next X years? And I said, I want to write a book. And Graham said, you know, you're still going to be saying that when you're 80 and not having actually tried. And I thought, oh, actually, no, I don't want to. I want to have tried and done my best. So he was very much an encourager, but it was in my head, not in Graham's.
No, I was busy saying I want to make lots of money and do all those sorts of things. I actually did want to write a book. That was one of my statements then. I wanted to write a book, but it was going to be on data modelling, not on not a novel.
So a textbook on Booktopia somewhere lost in the big stacks out the back there, instead of being here on the front page of a book. I must say, although there's no visuals here, Two Steps Forward is one of the most gorgeous books out there at the moment. It is a divine cover treatment.
All credit to Chong from Text Publishing. I mean, he's an award winner. He's done the covers for all of our books, and they just jump off the shelves.
It's just great. Extraordinary. Yeah. Sorry for that. You can look on our website to see the cover, but you must have one in your hand to really appreciate it. So make
texture,
sure you order
texture.
One. Texture. This book takes place with two people. We meet two people, and each chapter is from their point of view. It follows one another alternately, and they, for different reasons, start to walk Camino Trail, which is one of those enormous walks that pilgrims used to do to a holy site. Can you tell us about how this story sort of developed?
Well, we actually walked the Camino de Santiago, one of the versions of it, because I mean, when people talk about the Camino de Santiago, they are generally talking about walking from the French-Spanish border about 800 kilometres to Santiago de Compostela, which is the end point of all the pilgrimages. But of course, back in the 9th century when this started, people didn't all start at the same point. This was just really a convergence, a meeting point. They all walked out their doors and walked to that point. So all over Europe, there are feeder routes that take you either to that point or, in fact, to alternate points. And there are alternative trails as well, you know, to avoid the bandits in the old days, or because you're coming from Lisbon or something, which just is a completely different direction. So back in 2011, we walked a feeder route from France to St. Jean-Pied-de-Port, and then we took an alternative route around joining the main route that everybody knows only in the last couple of days into Santiago de Compostela.
And how long did that take?
87 days, 2,038 kilometres.
That's extraordinary. Absolutely. I mean, so in the book, there are two very different ways of preparing. One is none.
and the other is... That's Anne's character, Zoe, yep.
Yeah. And then there's the other one who has every single device under the sun who steps out. How did you both approach it in reality?
Probably neither of those, but we needed some preparation. I mean, the funniest thing that was closest to the Zoe is we had proper walking boots. The longest walk we'd ever done was probably the Ring of Kerry, which I think is about 120 kilometres. We thought we'd just walk to La Puy, which is 300, and we thought, you know, that's a long way. So we were going to use those boots. They were proper walking boots. And when we went to get our first stamp, like from Cluny, which is where we started.
You get a credential, you get a little passport type of thing, like a scout achievement book or something like that. And that's
you get lots of gorgeous stamps along the way. Everyone has a different stamp, and there's lambs and scallop shells and cathedrals. And so it's a fabulous document at the end. But anyway, when we got ours, he looked at our boots and said in French, which I won't try, that if we were to walk in these boots, our knees were going to be shot because of all of the steps would take to get that direction. Graham already had a dodgy knee, so we went out that day, bought new light Gore-Tex boots and started walking in them without any walking in at all, which you're told not to do, and we didn't have a blister ever on that walk, not one.
So, I mean, I'm not one for guidebooks and the like. I find them a bit dry. So I can take the stuff that comes up in this book seriously. You guys have done it. So when they talk about, I was fascinated, and I reread it when I read the sentence about the blister and the needle and the cotton going through. These little tips, these tips are tried and tested by you guys.
Absolutely, but not on the first walk. The first walk, we watch people falling left, right and centre, you know, strapping 30-year-olds in agony and having to abandon it. But the second time we did it, because we did the same thing again, finishing on the Camino Francis, so we knew what that was like, I got blisters on that one. And yes, I did that whole thing with the threading through.
So all the little bits, like the... can I use it? No, my question is, I'm lazy. I like my information to come in narrative, so I can really enjoy myself. Can I use these little tidbits? Are they still current?
So in fact, we didn't set out to write a guidebook. I mean, there are guidebooks.
I'm going to take that bit for myself. It's got some really good stuff in there.
But everything in it is authentic, except when we have a little acknowledgement. You know, thing at the end. You know, obviously the individuals who run the lodges and so forth, and you know the albergues, the hostels and so forth. They're not to be taken as being the actual people you're going to meet in those towns, and you shouldn't rely on it for opening hours and such like. But essentially, the techniques of walking and so forth, the fact that the route is all marked with scallop shell symbols and so on, that's all true. I mean, what's interesting, guys, is that there are a ton of memoirs set on the Camino, written greater or lesser strength. But, of course, they're always one person's individual take on it.
Shirley MacLaine.
Well, Shirley MacLaine famously, but very little fiction. Paulo Coelho wrote, technically it's a novel, but I mean, it's very much a memoir, very personal. The thing about fiction is that you can do more with fiction. We walked it twice, so we could bring the experiences from both of those walks in. We could combine those with experiences of people we met along the way, and I think tell a richer, more interesting story.
Well, before we got into this podcast, we were talking about the, there is a romantic element in, and I am propelled forward by my desire for things to go well, and I'm willing these two people to sort of finally talk to each other, which would be a good start. but I can understand you, because you said there's more to it than the romance, and this path, this trail, and the beauty of the descriptions of the scenery and the,
which is exquisite, absolutely beautiful.
So there's that aspect of it which is just as compelling, because I'm finding myself having these little daydreams as I'm reading it, going, maybe I should do this. I mean, I never really walk further than the TV to turn it off, but maybe I should try walking.
Well, I would pick up what you said, that there is a romantic subplot in there, but that's not why people are reading it. Mm. We've had our first readers give us feedback, and they say, you know, they were dragged along, kept reading because of the physical journey more than anything else. Yeah. They were fascinated by the Camino walk. And yes, there's a love story, and that's nice to have, but it's not the prime reason for reading. So we wouldn't see the natural audience for this book as being, say, romance readers. Mm-hmm. We would see the natural audience for the book as being people who are interested in a journey of renewal, who are interested in the armchair experience. And look, the number of people who've been, even from our first readers, the first three readers, one of them has now walked the Camino, one of them is planning to do it next year, and the other, it's a bucket list thing as soon as the kids leave home.
Pretty good success rate. Well, are you getting a kickback?
I was going to say, if this continues, then some of the lesser known sections of the Camino, which are covered in the book, are suddenly going to become crowded, which I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Yeah, Di Morrissey talks about her book, the big breakout book for her, which is set in Broome, and says, mm-hmm. you know, I began the Broome tourist business. And I want something out of this. Yeah. And you guys, I mean, I know there have been people, but because of the narrative flow of this, and how I mean, even just because I'm probably just over a third through, and I'm that awakening of the characters as they go through, because these are broken, bitter, well, one's bitter, one's broken.
baggage.
People are carrying much more than their packs and the chance of blisters. They're bringing on some pretty heavy stuff. What kind of stuff do you bring? I mean, you've done the Camino Trail, so you've got that personal experience. What kind of experience do you bring to that aspect of the characters? These characters have these quite large tragedies or upsets in their life that they were trying to overcome.
You do Zoe, eh?
Well, I mean, it's fairly clear from my point of view is I'm a psychiatrist. So I work, last 30 years I've been working with people who have varying degrees of grief and loss and depression. Mostly I work with perinatal women, but in many ways the having a baby, which is a positive thing, is also a loss because it's a loss of their freedom and the life they knew. But I've also dealt with a lot of people who are grieving deaths of people. So there's a lot of sort of experience with people through that. And on our walk we met a lot of people as well. And whilst none of their stories as we heard and saw them were exactly there, they inspired a lot of what went into the book as well. And I think just because of our age, we've also had our own renewal. That didn't include changing partners. We've been together 28 years, but it did include a change in direction, a huge one for Graham. He can talk to that now.
Yeah, well, I'd also add that Zoe has got a grieving process. She's lost her husband on the Camino, and Anne's first Camino when she walked, she had her pretty majorish in her life that she needed to deal with. And I'm sure that has informed what she's written, not just the sort of clinical view, but the personal view as well. Mm-hmm. And for me, Martin's walking this, he's a slightly dissatisfied bloke who's never quite followed his dreams, has sabotaged himself a bit. And I was sitting there with a screenplay that hadn't got up and was starting to have at least some doubts about this midlife change of career from a very successful and comfortable career in information technology to something very precarious in writing, which I was enjoying but hadn't produced any real fruit or recognition. So it was an important time out for me too. It wasn't so much, I think you can look at people talk about the Camino as changing you, and I think it probably changed Anne. She came out of that Camino, she made some life decisions. I'd previously had one change that was driven by myself, a life event, which was to give up my old career and start writing. And also an unexpected one, which was a bit of a near-death experience after running a marathon. So I guess that they were probably more important than walking the Camino for me. But the Camino gave me a time out that's probably had some real impact.
Well, some of the there's a bit in there where that space by yourself, like that, just, especially the, I think it was the first day. It's good. Holy hell! Yeah. taking that much time and actually just having you, yourself to talk to your own thoughts. Yeah. And I'm wondering if the trail in one sense was a filling up. So you had all this ambition and you come out of a very busy lifestyle and an opening up and seeing, because an author, a novelist has to see all, and you have to sort of train yourself to stop being so focused and sort of be a bit wider in vision to try and capture all these different things, and whether or not the Camino actually affected that in you, whether because you've got to, what's to stop and smell the roses, and that seems to be...
That was probably more me than Anne. Yeah. There was a single thing that came out of the Camino for me, other than the time out, which I'm sure a lot of subconscious stuff happened because I had the time out to just settle some thoughts. It was getting more in touch with the world around me, with the here and now. I'm a guy who lives in his head, so I don't care where I am generally. I can write whatever. And I'm generally more interested in human dynamics than the physicality of the environment. But you have to be aware of your physical surroundings when you walk the Camino, or you get lost.
Oh, there's that bit where you did get lost. When the character gets lost, because not taking any notice of the path and takes the wrong fork.
Yeah.
But I think it's a very specific walk because of its length. Now, we did a very long version, but if you do the traditional one, it's 33 to 35 days for most people. That's the average. And that's, it's enough more than the other walks. We've now done lots. We've done the Coast to Coast, the Hadrian's Wall, the West Highland Way, Wicklow Way, yeah. Inga Trail. So we've done lots of walks of 2 to 3 weeks. And this is different. This it forces you into this mindfulness of where you lose track of time in a sense. You've no idea where it's, you never get bored, but it's you're just being filled with all of this amazing sights and sounds and smells. And I've got to say that, you know, wine never tastes, and food just never tastes as good as they do after a day walking and just experiencing. It's a real challenge.
And did you, like people in the book, did you walk separately? Like you walked at your pace and you walked at your pace? Or did you keep time and walk together?
We're mostly together.
Oh, we never separated, really.
Yeah, not any distance, yeah.
No.
Sometimes I had to get a little bit ahead because I was singing badly. Because I've just been listening to some of the video and I'm going, oh my God, I was out of tune. That was terrible. How did he put up with that?
I think one of the things about it was spending that amount of time in each other's company, because we took a less frequented route. You know, if you take the main Camino Francés, the popular one, these days it's almost a rolling party. There's you know, so many people walking it now. They come together. You can get some solitude during the day, but you come together in the evenings. It's a busy party-like atmosphere. Whereas we were, in the first 2 weeks, both times we walked the Camino, in total we met only one other walker by day or by night. Mm. So it was in our own company for a lot of time. That is going to test or prove, I think, a lot of relationships to be just constantly together. So that was a part of it too.
Well, they do say that working people spend more time with the people at work than they do their own partners and their own families. So you guys working so busily for so many years and then suddenly going, who are you? Walking side by side 24 hours a day with your partner is something to either re-engage, or I suppose some people will start doing it and go, what did I ever think seeing you?
Well, we saw people walking who had chosen to walk separately, even though they were couples. So.
I get to talk to a lot of authors, and a lot of the people, there's quite a lot of people who sort of talk about the success or failure of other novelists, or the luck of, you know, if I did this and the other. But one thing I use you, Graham, often as something to give people inspiration of how to do it. Because
if Graham can do it, for God's sake, it can't be that hard.
Well, I just think there are a lot of people who complain about not selling enough and not getting it known. But every really successful author that I meet is someone who puts all into it. Not just the writing, but then the selling of the book and the marketing of the book and reaching out and meeting their readers and putting time and effort in. I mean, a great case for us was Jackie Collins came walking into here and went past our customer service and recognised someone she'd seen 2 years ago in a bookshop and said, hello, Sarah.
Yeah.
And then had a bit of a chat. When we first put out a call for people to do our blog interview, the ones who answered first were Wibble Smith and Lee Child and Jackie Collins, and they put the extra mile in and do these sort of things to make sure that everyone's kept happy and they're still in the market. You've, you know, really supported Rosie Project and all the books since then, and really pushed and pushed and pushed. At what point do you think that there is a time when an author can sit back and go, okay, I've done all that work, or are you going to be like Jackie Collins and keep going right to the end?
Look, I think we both are professionals rather than hobbyists with our writing.
Yeah.
And I think it partly comes out of having been in other professions, and you have a sense of how hard you have to work. And there are people who have dreams of publication and of international success who are not putting in the amount of work, you know, for quite legitimate reasons. They've got families to raise, they've got all sorts of stuff to do, but you couldn't be a neurosurgeon or a physicist or anything like that if you weren't putting in those hours. Mm-hmm. So our background is I'm a psychiatrist, a business manager and technologist, that you have to put in a certain amount of time. And I think that's their habits that are very hard to let go of. So it's not so much that we have to force ourselves.
Yeah. I agree totally, but also I'd add just our personality styles. We're very passionate about anything we do. And like back 20 or so years ago, we decided to make a movie, knew nothing about making a movie, and convinced all our friends to star in it, convinced people to do it on Wednesdays and weekends, and we just threw everything at it, and it was a load of fun. And
terrible movie.
It was a terrible movie. We had a lot of fun.
You're getting things done. That's the key. Yeah. If you've got that kind of person and you can get things done. Now, this book screams out, I mean, you've got movies at play with the other books, but is this lined up to be a movie? It is already?
It's been optioned by Fox Searchlight with Ellen DeGeneres down to produce. And our understanding is that Ellen was looking for a book about midlife renewal. And this fell into the slot.
So Ellen, just Ellen, is going to look after this one for you?
I have not sat across a dinner table with Ellen and talked about the book. On the other hand, just aside, the best of Adam Sharp, I did sit across the dinner table with Toni Collette, who has optioned the best of Adam Sharp, and she's down to play Angelina, the lead female role. And that was terrific fun, just talking to someone who was excited about producing and acting in something that I'd written.
And so something like Bill Gates jumping on a book that you've written, I mean, that's one step away from Bill Gates, but do you ever get, is there any chance of actually, Bill, I'm the guy that wrote that book you like?
Oh, no, we sat down with
Bill Gates.
I sat down, a little video up on, Anne and I sat down with Bill and Melinda Gates, and then Bill, Melinda and I made a little video which is up there on YouTube somewhere. So, you get to meet people who like you. It's an extraordinary thing. Someone said, how amazing that you got to have a couple of hours with Bill Gates. And I said, that's not the amazing thing. The amazing thing is he's read at least two of my books, which has got to have been 15 hours out of his life.
Yeah.
I've got to own that part of someone's life, have someone's attention for that period of time. And I think that's one of the enormous privileges about being an author for both of us, that someone is giving up a significant amount of their time to read the words that you put on the page. It's an enormous, enormous kick.
Well, I got a great deal of enjoyment reading this last night, and ended up having to leave the bedroom as my wife wanted to sleep and I didn't want to keep reading, so I had to go back into the lounge room and just sit there and keep going, because this is it really drove me straight into the middle of this story. I wanted to find out exactly what was going on. I think this is going to have a really broad readership. I think you've got a whole range of different readers who are going to try and who are going to pick this up. One, because it's like Bowerbirds, you go into a shop and you want to pick it up because it's just gorgeous. But but on the other hand, there's just so much in it. Like, there's so much to reward a reader.
Especially men. I've got this thing that I want more men to read fiction. I mean, constantly your publisher is saying to you, well, look, you've got to go for our female readers, because most of your readers will be female just because it's a novel. Look, what I find with a lot of men is that they like a novel where you learn something, where you're taken into a different world, and you come out of it with, almost like reading non-fiction, with a lot of, you were talking about, all these tips about walking the Camino, how to deal with blisters and that sort of thing. So we figure that this one has got a bit for both. It's got, it's got the narrative, it's got the story, but there's a lot of background in there which I think takes you into a different world and gives you an experience.
Well, years ago I wanted to do a lecture tour of schools, for boys' schools.
Yeah.
Literature can get you laid.
Yeah,
because so many guys can, the way in which they can't see what's going on in the other person's mind. Mm. I mean, books, novels are virtual reality units. You jump in and you can sort of get an idea.
Remind me, why did you do English literature, Graham?
I didn't.
Oh, it was French.
Yeah, I was French. I couldn't do English literature. Boys are so hopeless at school at that. They were in my day anyway. That I was just male, why bother doing English literature? You won't go as well as the girls. So it's taken a very, very long time to sort of crawl back to some level of competence in that field. I might.
Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in and talking about Two Steps Forward. It's been a pleasure.
John, a pleasure was ours.
And you can get Two Steps Forward at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.